Sunday morning on Focus Richmond, and a very special weekend. It is 4th of July weekend, and we thought we'd do something kind of special. He is Commander Paul E. Galante, U.S. Navy retired. And if you're not from Richmond and of a certain age, you don't know the level of which we are so honored to have him in the studio. Good morning, sir.
Good morning, Bill. How are you doing?
I'm great. Happy 4th of July, Independence Day weekend. We wanted you here because we're going to talk about something. I was over at McGuire Center a couple of months ago, and there's a sign that's been in the break room or in the lunch cafeteria area that you see in lots of military places, and it says, "Freedom isn't free." It reminded me that we should do this on 4th of July weekend. Your honors from the military include a Silver Star, 2 Legions of Merits, Bronze Star, 9 Combat Air Medals, and 2 Purple Hearts. You grew up in the military family, didn't you?
I did. And my dad was a career Army officer. We were raised on air bases. He was an aviation engineer in the Army. Mm-hmm. My earliest memories are wearing a little uniform my mother made for me, and and all these soldiers from my dad's unit were around drinking beer and singing songs. And I said, "Gosh, Mom, what are they saying?" Don't worry about it, son. You'll learn those later.
Yeah, you'll learn those later, and I'm sure you did. So your dad was an Army guy, or Army Air Corps, as they called it then. Did you want to be a flyer just almost from day one?
I knew what a P-38 was before I could count to 38, and a B-24 before I could count to 24. Yeah. And I grew up on these air bases. Fourth grade, Dad was stationed at Fort Leavenworth, Kansas. And they had a little airstrip there. The highlight of the show was the first time I saw a jet fighter. It was a top secret P-80 shooting star flown by Captain Chuck Yeager.
Oh, my gosh.
At Muroc Dry Lake Test Center, because Edwards hadn't been killed yet.
Yeah. So you were hooked at that point.
I was.
Yeah.
I saw that airplane go over at 200, 300, 400, and 500 miles an hour. I knew what I wanted to do.
I want some of that, yeah. I was looking at your bio here. Where did you go to high school?
Valley Forge Military Academy in Pennsylvania. They had scholarships for sons of military officers.
Valley Forge. So you can't get much more patriotic than Valley.
No, it is, and it was the most patriotic place, except the all the military instructors were Brits, because the founding president of the place was a consummate Anglophile, and he had all his retired Queen's Guards, and we marched like the Brits did.
So you're being patriotic at marching like a Brit. Did you do the salute with your palm out and the whole thing?
Yeah, we didn't salute like that, but we marched with arms out. And when I went to the Naval Academy, all the Marines there called me Robbie the Robot, because I could do the manual of arms and march better than they could.
When did you get to the Naval Academy?
Took an extra year. My brother was a year behind me at Valley Forge, but he got into West Point right away. Mm-hmm. So I got in the Naval Academy a year late, which put us in the same class. And so for 4 years, the good news was we each only had to buy one ticket for parents for the Army-Navy game. And my mother always sat on the side that the president was on, and my dad sat on the other side. And when the president walked across the field at halftime, they go down, swap tickets, and come back around.
All right, let's jump ahead now to your naval career, which was off to a great start. You were doing great, and Vietnam comes along, and you're flying what kind of plane?
An A-4 Skyhawk. It's off a World War II carrier designed for Hellcats at 80 miles an hour to land. And A-4 is a tiny airplane, but it was it landed considerably faster than a Hellcat. So even though the ship was designed a little bit differently, it had an angled deck, we had a lot of accidents. I flew 97 missions, some super hairy, some of them not so bad, but they all started off with a catapult shot off that aircraft carrier and a carrier landing, and an airplane going twice as fast as the ship was designed for.
Yeah.
So we'd had a lot of fatalities.
All right, so you mentioned being shot down. So you were shot down over Vietnam and taken prisoner.
Yes.
And when was that?
June 17th, 1966. So I just passed the 50th anniversary of...
Wow.
I like the joke about it called of my joining the Hanoi Skydiving Club.
And when you got to the famous prison, was known afterwards as the Hanoi Hilton, you had somebody pretty famous there that was being held with you. Is that correct?
Several. Yeah. Several turned famous. One ended up being a vice presidential candidate. He ended up being a U.S. congressman, then senator forever from Arizona.
John McCain.
Yeah, John McCain, a good guy. Yeah. And he used to be our clown. Every time we had a reunion, he'd get up and nobody got into politics and found you can't clown because you'd be able to irritate half of the audience.
And so, well, that came out when he ran for president, was his sense of humor really did show. I mean, it came through.
But I had to tone it down.
So you got to be friends with John McCain. When you got there, did you think, well, I'll be out of here in no time, or this is, how did you keep your morale up, I guess, would be the way we want to frame it.
I was probably the biggest optimist over there, because it's really a good bunch of people. Naval aviators, you're sitting there, my first class, I went to Pensacola, it's at a big auditorium, and this young fella, narrow of waist, broad of shoulders, big grin with shiny white teeth, big gold wings on his chest, just like I wanted, said, everybody look to your left. And we all looked to our left. And everybody look to your right. And we all looked to our right. He said, one of the three of you is not going to be around in 5 years. And that's about what the fatality rate was. And it's pretty dangerous. So the movie, The Right Stuff, Tom Wolfe handled it perfectly. I mean, I'll stand up there. Well, the reason he bought the farm is not because he's a bad pilot. It's because he didn't have the right stuff. But it turns out, I found out that if you have a single-engine airplane and a bullet goes into the engine, there's not a whole lot of luck involved with the right stuff.
Yeah.
Then arrived in Hanoi on the 29th of June. That was auspicious because that was the first time we bombed in Hanoi. This is back in the days of Robert Strange, McNamara, and a few other folks who decided to civilianize the military. They drew circles around targets where we couldn't bomb and then let the enemy know we weren't going to bomb there. And then they made something on a target. They told everybody. They just moved all our anti-aircraft guns over there because they didn't want to hurt the civilian population. The first time I learned that air raids are much more impressive when you're on the receiving end than the giving end. And
You're being held prisoner of war with how many folks were in the famous, what is now called the Hanoi Hilton, or I saw you speak recently at a dinner and you called it a gated community. How many folks were in there?
I was number 87, shot down and captured there. So but probably 87 or 88. I don't know if they forgot about me, but they didn't. They threw me in a cell and didn't do anything for 3 days. And I was starving and thirsty. And so I started yelling, and the guard came, and I said, whoops. Ended up in an interrogation. I had one out in the field, but this is the first one in Hanoi, first time I'd ever been tortured, beaten, and it was an interesting experience, especially I was starved. And
so you hadn't eaten or drank anything for 3 days?
They gave me a little water and stuff en route and some little rice and some bugs and stuff to eat.
How many times, or was it a regular thing to be tortured at that point? Is that something they did on a regular basis, or is it was just intimidation once in a while? How did that work?
It wasn't. Right? I mean, they didn't do it every day. Nobody got tortured every day, except when you're in interrogation and you refuse to do stuff. But that was the name of the game. They can't prepare somebody for that. We had a survival school that knew it was coming, and they can sort of graphically describe what's happening. But the survival school, I got slapped around and knocked off my stool one time. They had SEALs, fairly realistic training. They tell you what to expect, but they can't really demonstrate.
Well, it's no way to simulate that.
Well, the worst thing is not knowing when it's going to be over.
How many folks do you think would lose their mind under similar situations? And how did you not lose yours? Was that just because you were an optimist?
Who said I didn't lose it? My wife, late wife, Phyllis, she commented a couple of times that she wanted to send me back to Hanoi for some little postgraduate training. It was really rough. And the solitary confinement was worse for me. The beatings were bad, but they can only do that so long. You either passed out or they had to quit. But the solitary confinement, not knowing when that's going to end, day after day after day. Even though I was only totally out of communications for a short period of time, we could tap on the walls. They had some kind of a communication with another American. It wasn't much, but it was a little bit. But you still felt like you're climbing the walls sometime. You wanted to get away, but you couldn't. You're stuck in there in this little 7x7 foot cell with...
What's the weather like there? I know it's tropical, right?
Yeah, the weather, we didn't have any air conditioning or heat either. It just, the window was open. It was boarded up, but it was direct outside access. So the summertime, I imagine those cells, they're made out of a masonite construction. I think it was probably 125 or 130 degrees in those cells during the summer. And in the wintertime, it went right down to outside air temperature, which I don't think it ever got below freezing, but it was in the 30s or
cold
40s.
Yeah.
The foothills of the Himalayas in North Vietnam.
Our very special guest is Commander Paul E. Galante, U.S. Navy retired. He was a prisoner of war in Vietnam and a hero to a lot of us who grew up in the Richmond area during the Vietnam War. We had the POW bracelets, and Paul Galante's name was on a lot of kids at my high school. And I'm just thrilled and honored to have him here for our 4th of July special, Focus Richmond. I'm going to take a little break. I want to come back and talk about your wife, because she's huge in your life and a good example of what military families go through. You're listening to a very special edition, 4th of July weekend, of Focus Richmond.